Welcome to the Situation Update for Tuesday, November 22nd, 2022. And wow, do we have some bombshells for you today. We have an exclusive interview with Dr. Francis Boyle, who just finished studying and reviewing the new proposed WHO pandemic treaty. It is in draft form, and as Dr. Francis Boyle describes it, it is a roadmap to unleashing a global medical science dictatorship to enslave and terrorize humanity. And this is going to put the WHO in charge of your doctor, your hospital, your clinic, your governor, your city council, your president, everything you can imagine. The WHO is about to take it all over and have total control through a medical dictatorship right before the release of the next bioweapon plandemic that is also coming, as you will hear in my interview with Dr. Francis Boyle. That's the interview coming up here later on in this episode. So today we're going to talk quite a bit about this WHO pandemic treaty. It's known as WHO CA Plus. CA, like the abbreviation for California. I don't know why they call it that. But it's WHO CA Plus. If you want to search for it, I have a copy of the draft in PDF form, and it is some nebulous language written by a bunch of attorneys. And that's why I invited Dr. Francis Boyle on to help decode this, because he's the expert who writes treaties and also reads them and analyzes them. And he is a law professor who also teaches human rights law. So he's the perfect person to understand this. And he told me in the interview, as you'll hear, that through biological terrorism, that the governments of the world are subjecting their own civilian populations to Nuremberg-level crimes. That's almost an exact quote. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but you'll hear him describe this later on in this podcast. We're also going to go through 10 important things that you need to know about this pandemic treaty, and that's brought to us courtesy of James Roguski at Substack. It's James, R-O-G-U-S-K-I, jamesroguski.substack.com. He's got a list called 10 Things Everyone Should Know About the Proposed Pandemic Treaty, and we're going to go through that here shortly, and it is mind-boggling. It is mind-boggling, the level of authoritarian tyranny, the medical dictatorship that they're trying to roll out worldwide, and you just know that there are more pandemics coming because they need this framework in place in order to exert control over everyone's lives and to force people into lockdowns, masks, and vaccines, and keeping children home from school, and forced isolation, and social distancing, and everything else. And of course, mandatory injections, not just one vaccine, but multiple vaccines forever. So we're going to get into that here shortly. But here's the interview with Dr. Francis Boyle, audio only, and it's a little scary, honestly, but we had a great conversation. He's a heroic, courageous individual for blowing the whistle on all of this. And of course, he's censored everywhere by the mainstream media. So you won't hear this interview in any other media except alternative media. And of course, that's why I built Brighttown.com, so we can have these kinds of conversations. So here we go, Dr. Francis Boyle. All right, welcome, folks. Mike Adams here, the founder of Brighttown.com. And today we have a very special guest, someone who is key, just pivotal to the debate and the history of bioweapons and dual-use research into biological weapons. You know him. His name is Dr. Francis Boyle, and he is the author of the Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989 that was signed by President Reagan, and he has been very active in researching and communicating about these issues that face humanity in the years since, especially since the COVID came upon us. So, Dr. Boyle, it's an honor, sir, to have you on the show. You have done extraordinary work. Welcome, and thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you, Mike, for having me on, and my best to your listening audience. And I did want to state that I called for and drafted the U.S. domestic implementing legislation for the Biological Weapons Convention, known as the Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989, that was passed unanimously by both houses of the United States Congress and signed into law by President George Bush Sr. with the approval of the United States Department of Justice.
Oh, wow. Okay. So your research into this spans quite a bit of the existence of the technology, and yet what we're seeing now are, you know, new technologies such as CRISPR and gene editing that did not even exist when you first wrote that. So what are your concerns now, especially regarding Joe Biden's recent executive order?
Right, Mike. In fact, what got me involved in the opposition to biological weapons was that DNA genetic engineering had just come into its infancy back in those days. And it turned out that the Reagan administration and his neoconservatives were abusing DNA genetic engineering for the purpose of developing offensive biological warfare weapons. So what I wanted to do with my legislation was first to stop that, and then second, any other forms of research, development, testing on biological weapons, including synthetic biology, which is in my statute as well. That was anticipated, and it clearly criminalized synthetic biology, which would be gene editing and CRISPR. So as a matter of fact, at the first convention of the synthetic biologists, one of their primary recommendations was to repeal my Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act, because they fully intended to get into using gene editing, CRISPR, et cetera, for biological warfare purposes. In fact, if you study the public record, Mike, you will find out that the whole field of synthetic biology was set up and funded by the Pentagon, by its agency, DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Program Agency. They set this whole thing up. And so whenever you're reading about the miracles of CRISPR, gene editing, remember the Pentagon is behind this.
You know, that's a really important point. And our audience is quite sophisticated in this realm. And they understand that throughout these past few decades, the neocons have weaponized many different technologies and have used them against civilian populations, for example, in Iraq and in many other areas around the world. It has been an abuse of this technology, at least in my opinion. This is kind of a wild card, but have you followed the accusations of biological weapons research facilities run by the United States in Ukraine?
Yes, I have. And remember, those facilities were set up by the Pentagon.
Yes.
They were not set up by Mother Teresa and the Sisters of Charity. The Pentagon specializes in killing people. And from what I have read, all the evidence that has so far come into the public record, yes, indeed, they are consistent with offensive U.S. Biological warfare weapons and programs throughout Ukraine. Yes.
Do you have any sense of whether research milestones were achieved in those facilities, or was it suspended because of the conflict there, or did weapons come out of that over the years that are now in freezers somewhere, or what was the upshot of that?
Well, it does appear they were developing weapons, right? And it does appear some of those weapons at least leaked out of those facilities, setting off exotic types of diseases there. I'm not saying that they were actually used. I don't even think the Russian government said they were actually used. And when the Russian government blew the whistle on these programs, they were shut down and all of their biological warfare agents were shipped somewhere else to do the best they could to cover up.
Right, right. Well, that brings up another question. Do you find that the information environment today, both from mainstream media, but also online and big tech and so on, Do you find it shocking how much censorship there is now about even talking about these subjects that you and I have done interviews about before? But, you know, in the 1980s, you could talk about these things and it was covered in the media. And now there seems to be this denialism that any of this is really going on, doesn't there?
Well, all I can do is speak about my personal history here, Mike. I was the first person to blow the whistle on the fact that the anthrax attacks of October 2001 came out of a U.S. biological warfare program and lab. That was November 2, 2001, at a convention for the Council for Responsible Genetics held at Harvard Divinity School. And as I was walking into the Div School there, there was a Fox News camera there who interviewed me, and I said, "Well, sure, this was super weapons grade anthrax that could only have come out of a U.S. biological warfare weapons program and lab." And I have a list of them all back in my office. Back in those days, they were a matter of public record if you look for them. And then I went in at the conference. I was leading a workshop on the biowarfare, and I said the same thing. And Professor John King, founder of Council for Responsible Genetics, agreed with me. Then I came back here in my office. I gave an interview to Pacifica Radio Network to the same effect. And then later that week, I was on the BBC saying that clearly this is an offensive biological warfare weapon that came out of a U.S. Program and lab. And then an order was given, and I was never interviewed again by any Western news media source on biological weapons, biological warfare. That then goes back to, I would say, the first week of November 2001. So, of course, yes, there's massive censorship, disinformation, everything you can imagine out there, sure.
Well, hence the reason that these alternative platforms like this one, Brighteon, are so crucial for this. And you've been very gracious, Dr. Boyle, in doing interviews with many alternative or upcoming media platforms. And in fact, today I'd like to get into the main topic that you mentioned before we began here about the new WHO treaty. You have a real warning for humanity. I'd like to give you the floor on that. And I'll jump in with questions, but go ahead with that. What's your primary concern?
Well, Mike, as I mentioned before we went on the air, I first wanted to talk about the Biden executive order on advancing biotechnology, which President Biden himself signed in the White House last September. And I won't go through all of it here. The critical language comes at the very end. It's sort of snuck in there. And let me quote for you, Mike, this language, Roman numeral 7. Develop and work to promote and implement resources bilaterally and multilaterally to facilitate appropriate oversight for life scientists, dual use research of concern, and research involving potentially pandemic and other high consequence pathogens, and manufacturing related to research and development globally. Now, Mike, let me break that down for you. All right. So develop work to promote and implement dual research of concern. Dual research of concern. They are admitting, Mike, that Biden is authorizing and approving in a presidential executive order biological warfare weapons. Dual research means it's offensive and defensive at the same time. And right. To have an effective biological warfare weapon, first you need the weapon, and then you need an alleged vaccine or antidote to protect your own people from blowback. So whenever you see dual research of concern, that's even a term of art adopted by the United States government. you know they are going to develop biological warfare weapons, again, using DNA genetic engineering, synthetic biology, gene editing, CRISPR-Cas9, et cetera. Right. That's exactly what they're doing here, Mike. And then notice this. And research involving potentially pandemic and other high consequence pathogens. So they admit they are doing dual use research involving pandemic and high consequence pathogens. They admit that. That's what they're doing. This is where COVID-19 comes from, Mike. As I've said before, it is an offensive biological warfare weapon with gain of function properties that was developed by the University of North Carolina Biosafety Level Lab 3 in conjunction with the Wuhan Biosafety Level Lab 4 lab, which is China's Fort Detrick. And I should point out, if you read that UNC BSL-3 contract, not only is the Chinese Bat Queen on there from Wuhan BSL-4, but Fort Detrick, our own Fort Detrick, is involved. So doesn't this, they are going to do more of this, Mike. We have to understand how serious. They are not stopping. They are doubling down. They are tripling down. And we can then expect more pandemics like COVID-19, Mike. If you're reading the news, watching the news media, reading the news media, they're all saying, well, another pandemic is coming. Right. It's coming as a result of their programs. That's exactly right. That's how they know another pandemic is coming, Mike. I just want
clearly,
to
clearly they're so. But this is an executive order, so it's
a presidential order. It's not just an executive order. It comes right out of the White House, signed by President Biden himself, and is currently being implemented by any federal agency or contractor with the United States federal government. Yes.
But doesn't this contradict existing restrictions and regulations at the NIH, the NIAID, FDA, DHS, and so on? I mean, the Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989 that you authored and so on, or don't we have treaties in place that would disallow this kind of activity or are supposed to?
Of course, the Biological Weapons Convention prevents it, and my Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989 criminalize it with life imprisonment. The Department of Justice wanted to put the death penalty in there. I resisted that because I'm a lifelong abolitionist. I put life imprisonment. The problem, Mike, is that these are all United States government federal agencies. And the War Department and the CIA are working on this and funding it. So, of course, the Department of Injustice is not going to enforce any of these laws, including my own law. That's the problem here.
Wow. Okay. So we've now entered a realm where this current administration, much like previous administrations, by the way, is actively seeking to overrule or violate laws prohibiting this research. And they are admitting they're engaging in dual use research, which is the development of biological weapons. And out of that, as you're saying, you believe we will have more pandemics. Is that from accidental release, deliberate deployment, enemies getting their hands on it? Or what kinds of mechanisms do you think would result?
Well, it would be both, Mike. All three. But in the case of the anthrax attacks, that was super weapons grade anthrax that came out of Fort Detrick. And that was done deliberately in order to ram through the USA Patriot Act through Congress that sets up an American police state, and also to provoke and justify war against Iraq. In the other cases, I believe the Wuhan BSL-4 COVID-19 was a leak. From all the evidence I've seen so far, it was a leak. All these BSL-3s and BSL-4s leak, every one of them, if you study the history here. That is why in the documentary film Anthrax War by Cohn and Nadler, as far back as 2009, which you can find online, I served a consultant to them, and at the very end, I say, this is a catastrophe waiting to happen, these BSL-3s and BSL-4s. And then again in 2015, I gave a very lengthy interview. You can find it in my new book, Resisting Medical Tyranny, where I said, this is all a biocatastrophe waiting to happen. It was a statistical certainty as I saw it as you know, even before 2009.
So these military-grade weaponized pathogens can be used for lots of purposes, as you said, with the anthrax scare. It can be used to justify an attack on another nation. It can be used to push a narrative, or they can escape unintentionally and cause havoc. They could also be deployed against nations like Russia, let's say, or China, for example. And is there any way to stop this? Are there any legal efforts underway, lawsuits to try to prevent this executive order or presidential order from taking shape?
Right, Mike. And the military-industrial complex, the CIA, they've used these weapons against us, the American people. We have to understand there is a stockpile of that super weapons-grade anthrax that has been called Amerithrax still out there. My best estimate is it's at Dugway Proving Ground right now. They'll use it again against us if they decide it's necessary. Let's look at monkeypox that just came out. That clearly was a biological warfare weapon that came out of a lab. It had 30 mutations over and above the wild-type monkeypox in Africa. And there it was. It was released all over the world. So that was done. Why? I think it was done to scaremonger states of the world into adopting the World Health Organization regulation amendments that were then under consideration in Geneva to be followed up by this World Health Organization treaty. So, you know, whenever it suits the interests of, you know, the deep state, call them what you want, they'll use biological warfare weapons even against our own people, as they have done before.
Yeah, good point. So the elements of the government are, in fact, the biological terrorists, and they use these as leverage to get what they want. Namely, one of those outcomes is a global medical police state where no one, and certainly no local government and no doctor, would have an individual right to speak out against the narrative. That really brings us to the WHO pandemic treaty. I know you've done a lot of research on that. What do you see that treaty? And you told me earlier that's in a preliminary draft form currently. What are the big red flags in that treaty that you see?
Right, Mike. Well, I had read a previous edition, and then the near final edition just came out, which I read in preparation for this interview today. It literally is a totalitarian medical scientific dictatorship for the entire world that will be set up under the auspices of the WHO, which is really a front organization for the American CDC, Bill Gates, the drug industry, Big Pharma, the biological weapons industry, and the Chinese Communist government. And the connection here is quite clear. We know, for example, Tony Fauci is Biden's White House scientific advisor on all of this, including this recent biotech order I just went through you with, saying it's going to be full speed ahead on dual-use research of concern, even into pandemics. Okay, well, guess what? President Trump pulled us out of the WHO. Biden put us back in, and then he appointed Tony Fauci as the U.S. representative on the WHO executive committee. So it's clear what is happening then is because of resistance here in the United States across the board to these totalitarian orders coming out of the United States federal government, both under Trump and even more so under Biden, Fauci and the others have tried to do an end run around the United States Constitution, state, local health authorities. Under the 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution, public health is considered to be part of the police powers of the states of the union, not the federal government. So you can have opposition, for example, in several of governors here around the country saying, we're just not taking any more orders from the CDC or Washington, D.C. What in light of all this resistance that has now developed during the past 2 years of this pandemic, Fauci and the rest of the men have decided to do an end run on that, go to Geneva, get this treaty, and then the treaty will be the supreme law of the land under Article 6 of the United States Constitution and a very famous U.S. Supreme Court Missouri case, Missouri versus Holland, that will be binding here in the United States of America on all state, local health authorities, and even your medical doctors. Your personal physicians will have to take orders from the WHO given to the CDC and then straight down to you. So Tedros there, who's not even a medical doctor, and Bill Gates and the drug industry and Big Pharma and the Chinese Communist government will be determining your personal health care given to you by your primary care physician. That's how dangerous this is. It reads like Hobbes' Leviathan, which, you know, I lecture on my law students in my course on jurisprudence.
That is a horrifying totally scenario you're laying out there. But let me ask you this: that for a treaty to be officially ratified, doesn't the U.S. Senate need to give it a 2/3 majority vote? Or can they try to bypass that and say, well, we're just going to accept it without a Senate vote?
Right. That's what is really devious about this treaty, Mike, the WHO treaty. At the very end, it says that it can provisionally come into force upon the mere signature of the treaty, thus avoiding and usurping and circumventing any role the Senate might play in the ratification of the treaty. Now, I am unaware of any other multilateral treaty that the United States government is a party to that has such a provision. Indeed, the U.S. Senate has taken the position officially rejecting any notion of treaties provisionally coming into force, but it's right in there. So obviously, whoever drafted this treaty for the WHO had professional competence in both U.S. constitutional law and international law to bring this treaty into effect immediately. So the moment this treaty is finalized, Biden or Blinken can sign it, and the treaty will provisionally come into effect immediately, and then Biden can issue another presidential executive order ordering the implementation of this treaty. Yes, so it's extremely dangerous, and it was deliberately drafted and designed to circumvent and usurp the role that the Senate plays in giving its advice and consent to treaties. And this is the first, I haven't read every treaty that the United States government is a party to, but I've read most of the multilateral treaties. And this is the first time I've ever read a provision like this. It is truly sick and demented, the lawyers who drafted this. And it seems to me it was probably U.S. State Department lawyers. Remember, Fauci is at the White House, so he can get access to State Department lawyers to do his dirty work there at the White House and also at the WHO. Clearly, whoever drafted this knew about the technicalities of the U.S. treaty ratification process and designed to circumvent it.
Okay, right. That's the key. Designed to circumvent it, yet, you know, I mean, so many questions. You're a professor of law, and surely people would raise the question, how can a foreign document self-proclaim the usurpation of the authority of a sovereign nation and get away with it, right? Because I can't just go to Somalia and write up a document that says this supersedes the United States Constitution if I can get Biden to sign it.
This treaty will supersede the constitutions of every country in the world and their democratically elected officials. So, you know, if you have a governor saying, well, I'm just not going to do this, what will happen is the federal government could go into a federal court and get an injunction and mandate that they carry it out on pain of, a massive fine or a civil contempt or criminal contempt put in jail. Right. And doctors who do not comply, like my friend, Dr. Merrill Nass, can be subjected to disciplinary proceedings and have their licenses suspended or revoked and their living source of income deprived. Right. That's exactly what's going on here if you read the document.
But what you're laying out is rather horrifying. That is, if somebody anywhere in the world can write up a document that contains similar language and could say any crazy thing, like everybody has to commit suicide for depopulation, if Biden signed that, then what you're saying is that would go into effect and everybody would have to go along with it and commit suicide, or the federal government would crack down on them. I mean, wouldn't at least 24 governors in the United States tell the WHO to go pound sand on something like this, and you'd have an outcry from the Senate and so on? Wouldn't there just be a massive backlash in the U.S.?
Well, let's look at the Frankenshot mandates.
Good point.
That came right out of Biden. Trump developed them, warp speed. Even right. Kamala Harris said, well, I wouldn't take any so-called vaccine produced by Trump, and yet allegedly she did. Biden came in here and mandated, I call them Frankenshots, they're like Frankenfoods, all over the country, and everyone rolled over and played dead and proceeded to order everyone to take these Frankenshots. And now we're having, massive deaths and disabilities, even reported here in the United States by VAERS and the European Health Agency that is more truthful on this. So, and the carnage has just begun. So, yeah, you've already been ordered to go in and commit suicide, and large millions of Americans have just gone along with it. Mike, can I say?
You make a really good point. Yeah, in fact, what, 12.5 billion injections have been given worldwide. Over 5.5 billion people have taken them, obviously some multiple shots. And in the United States, I don't know what the uptake number is, but it's well over half the population, it seems. So getting to the nitty-gritty.
And by the way, Mike, I just want to deal with casualties here. I helped defend Captain Dr. Yolanda Hewitt Vaughn, who refused to give the experimental medical vaccines for the biological warfare weapons, anthrax and botulin in Gulf War I. In violation of the Nuremberg Code on Medical Experimentation. To make a long story short, those Frankenshots that she opposed, starting, I think it was December of 1990, I came to her pro bono defense in February 1991 through the court martial and et cetera. But of 500,000 U.S. military personnel given those two Frankenshots, a minimum of 11,000 were murdered, as Dr. Hewitt Vaughn and I regretfully figured was going to happen.
Right, and doesn't count the injured and maimed.
100,000 were disabled.
There we go.
That's 20%. And those figures are lowball figures because the Pentagon still lies about the Gulf War sickness, which it is.
Yes,
the Gulf War sickness. I still hear today from veterans suffering from the Gulf War sickness and asking me for my advice where they can go and get proper treatment because they can't get it from the VA. The VA have been told to tell them, well, it's all in your head. And they just can't get proper medical treatment there. So, right. Mike, that just gives you an idea of the floor of death and disability we're facing here with this new round of COVID Frankenshots. That's a floor, a minimum estimate.
Well, let me add to that.
Realistic estimate, it is going to be far superior to that. And certainly, you know, within the next year to two, we're going to be seeing a humanitarian catastrophe here as a result of these COVID Frankenshots.
So one of my previous guests, I'm sure you're familiar with him, Mr. Ed Dowd, has done a rather rigorous study of U.S. Labor Department data as well as insurance industry data. And he has a couple of statisticians that he works with and has concluded that excess mortality in the post-COVID vaccine era is running 32% across the general population. So normally, you know, pre-COVID, about 7,700 people a day would die in the United States. If you add an extra 32% to that, that's 2,462 people, I believe, that's the number that are dying each day in America. Right now, it's almost a 9/11 scale, you know, genocide or whatever you want to call it against the American people. But it's every day, and these are, in essence, I would say, biological weapons against us.
They are. If you look at the mRNA technology used by Moderna and Pfizer BioNTech. It was developed and bought and paid for by DARPA, the Pentagon's DARPA. Right. That's where that came from. So, yes, it is a biological warfare weapon. And all these Frankenshots so far give you particles of COVID-19. They're injected right into you. So, in other words, they are actually giving you an offensive biological warfare weapon with gain of function properties that has come out of China's Fort Detrick, right? You're getting those cells, right?
So,
and remember, they also came from Fort Detrick,
exactly. The origins with extra gain of function in Wuhan
and the UNC BSL-3 with Fort Detrick right there working with the UNC BSL-3. They're all in cahoots together, right?
So then, and by the way, that comes to 900,000 Americans dead in 1 year from this shot. So almost a million. And getting to the WHO pandemic treaty that you mentioned. So if they're able to enforce this all the way down to the local level, then the WHO, which got everything wrong about this pandemic, by the way, they could issue an alert. They could issue a level 5. They could mandate vaccines. They could mandate no one can use ivermectin. They could mandate quarantines. They could turn the whole planet into a pandemic police state on command.
That's correct, Mike. That's my reading of the treaty. And that's what I do professionally.
Right.
You know, I've been reading treaties since I was a student at Harvard Law School, and some of the top experts in the world taught me how to read treaties. And I draft documents like this, not terrible, pernicious, genocidal type documents, but that's my read of what's going on here, right?
So if they're setting this up, clearly they plan to use it.
Pardon me?
Since they're setting up the language.
The problem, Mike, my reading of this treaty, this is almost finalized. They're talking about finalizing it after the first of the year. And once it is finalized, if Biden signs it, then they'll implement it by means of a presidential executive order. We could see all this unfolding at the beginning of next year, right? 2020.
So then we're one scare away from total global medical police state tyranny under this treaty.
Well, certainly here in the United States, Mike, what other countries do if they become a party to it, I guess that is their business. But again, in my reading of this, given the involvement of Fauci, given the fact that the drafter knew all about the U.S. treaty ratification process, this treaty is primarily directed against us, the American people. And they're going to try to impose it upon us as soon as they possibly can, Mike.
So I would then expect very quickly after this is signed, guess what? Another pandemic, another outbreak, another variant, and then another mass media campaign to scare people into abiding by whatever is commanded by the WHO. You know what's so frustrating about this, Dr. Boyle, is that, of course, none of these people were ever elected. They're not representatives of the United States. This is completely extrajudicial. It's extra-constitutional. It contradicts everything that should define the sovereignty of a nation.
That's right. It was drafted for that reason by experts on U.S. constitutional law. Again, I'm just speaking here for the United States because it's clear Fauci et al. Want to ram this through here in the United States, and it will usurp our Constitution and our democratically elected officials. And also, if you read the treaty, of course, it has a propaganda component in there to control the media, to control the message, to prevent people like you and me from talking about it. Right. It will be officially authorized propaganda by the WHO. Right.
So under this system, there's no end to authoritarian tyranny and control, because anytime a population starts to get out of line, they can just release another pathogen, lock everybody down, separate everybody, say, well, it's the WHO.
Right. I mean, if you read the treaty, that's clear. And not only that, it sets up an entire international organization to supervise that treaty, which is unique. There are very few treaties. So it's not just a treaty. They set up an entire international organization that will supervise this treaty, right?
Does the treaty mention specific local actions such as lockdowns, quarantines, isolation, things like that?
It gives the WHO authority to do whatever they think they want to do, right? So if they want lockdowns, it mentions vaccines, yeah. They can do whatever they want, sure.
Well, what if they decide that the only way to eliminate the threat of the pandemic is to eliminate the number of living people?
Well, isn't that the sub silentio agenda behind all of this, Mike?
I mean, they
don't come out and say that per se in those words. But it's clear that, you know, this is an implementation on a global scale of the Nazi doctrine of useless eaters, right?
Well, we hear every month or so, you know, we follow food industry news quite closely. About every month, there's a mass slaughter of chickens because there was an outbreak, or a mass slaughter of pigs because there was an outbreak. And it seems like we are the ranch animals now, and they can put an outbreak into the population and then just call for culling and basically treat us the same as farm animals. And I think that's what they've been doing for the last couple of years.
I don't see how else you can conclude, Mike. That's my assessment of the situation since I was the first person to blow the whistle that COVID-19 was an offensive biological warfare weapon with gain-of-function properties that leaked out of the Wuhan BSL-4. I did that in a worldwide alert on January 24, 2020, And that's my assessment of what's been going on, right?
Yeah, thank you for that reminder. You're absolutely correct. I had almost forgotten that you were the first whistleblower to go public with authority about the origins of that, and you are still here blowing the whistle on what's coming. Now, let's talk about possible solutions, or how do we resist this? Is there any way to pressure our lawmakers or our representatives? You know, I mean, this is so crazy. How does a nation fight back against this kind of tyranny?
Well, Mike, I discussed this in my new book you can find there at Amazon called Resisting Medical Tyranny. And I won't go through an entire book here, but the bottom line is this. I think, and I'm just talking about we, the American people, okay, what we can do to resist. And in my book, I outline that everyone involved here at the highest level is guilty of murder and conspiracy to commit murder, either for their involvement in the research and development of COVID-19 or for their research, development, and imposition of the Franken-shots. And I was originally hired here to teach criminal law for several years before I moved over to teach international human rights law. And I go through the Anglo-American common law definition of murder that applies in every state of the union except Louisiana that has civil code system down there, and parse out in my book that the people involved here are guilty of murder. So what I recommend in my book then is that you go in to your state or local prosecutor. The feds are all in bed with each other, so it's a waste of time. And the federal courts are all bought off. They're part of the system. But you go into your state or local prosecutors, district attorney, state's attorney, attorney general, and demand that they convene grand juries and get indictments for murder and conspiracy to commit murder for everyone in their territorial jurisdictions that have died either as a result of COVID-19 or as a result of the Franken shots. And I outlined that whole strategy in my book. And indeed, since then, I did have a 45-minute conversation with the Attorney General of Louisiana, which is not Anglo-American common law, but I did go through his homicide statutes with me, and he agreed with me on the legal theory. So, you know, it's basically a political question. And then I had a 30-minute conversation with the Deputy Attorney General of South Carolina. And again, he agreed with me on the legal arguments, but admitted this is a political problem. So state and local prosecutors are elected by us, and we pay their bills. We pay their salaries. And we can also diselect them, make that clear. So my advice, and I have people working on this now in Texas and Georgia and Florida, is to get together with your friends and your neighbors, get the names of people in your area who have died from COVID-19 or the Franken shots, and go in and demand grand juries be convened. As I see it, if we can get even one indictment for murder and conspiracy to commit murder of any of these people, I think the whole house of cards would collapse. So that's what I'm recommending to the American people. Now, different states, I there's different strategies, different countries around the world that, you know, I could discuss elsewhere, but we'd be here a long time.
Well, it's extraordinary that you mentioned that, and I've heard other rumors of similar actions underway, but nothing gaining tremendous traction at this point. Although I would suspect, even AG Paxton in Texas might be open to a discussion. And I'm thinking of Schmidt in Missouri and a few others around who might be willing to have a discussion. But, you know, at some point, a state like Texas, for example, has to start looking around and say, well, gosh, you know, 100,000 Texans have been murdered and it's going to continue. And what does that do to not just the human rights violations and the families of the victims, but also from a state level, the economic condition of the state, the costs of people suffering and the disability of former state employees who are collecting medical benefits and pensions and so on. I mean, there are economic implications of this beyond even the human or the humanitarian angle. Do you think these states will eventually wake up and realize what's happening?
Well, I would hope so, but that depends on us, the people, Mike, right? I mean, we still have democratically elected governments here under the 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution. It makes it very clear all powers not given to the federal government remain in the hands of the states of the union and the people. That's us. So we are going to have to apply political pressure just like the American people have done on other grassroots campaign, you know, civil rights for African Americans. That was all a grassroots campaign. I've been involved in grassroots campaign for, you know, most of my life, my career, ending the Vietnam War. That was a grassroots campaign. So we need grassroots campaign here to bring pressure to bear on state and local prosecutors to get these indictments right. That's what we need.
Right. Well, a key distinction that's really important here, if you compare this to the civil rights movement in America, although there were some murders, but nothing on this scale. So most of the victims of civil rights discrimination, let's say in the 1960s, for example, most of those victims were still living and could march across the bridge and could voice what had happened to them. Whereas today, all the victims of this humanitarian crime, they are dead and thus they are silenced. Their voices no longer are able to be expressed. And it's only the rest of us who are still living that must speak for the dead. I mean, this is how the genocide, quote, wins, is they kill those who are the victims.
Right. That's what's going on. The victims are dying or being severely disabled and not in a position to speak out for themselves. So it's up to the rest of us to do that for them and also to save ourselves in the process because we're on the list.
Exactly. Well said. We're on the list. And I guess the bottom line is, folks, demand action from your local state AG or we will all eventually be annihilated or at least targeted for annihilation at some level. And at some point, the WHO is going to try to make sure that you can't say no to the vaccine.
That's right, to the Franken-shots. And there'll be more of them coming along. They've made that clear in the Biden executive order and also in the WHO pandemic treaty. There'll be more warp speed type of Franken-shots that they're going to impose upon you, right?
Yep. Well, one last comment, and then we'll wrap this up. But I saw the White House offering, in conjunction with retailers like pharmacies, CVS, Walgreens, and so on, $20 in grocery store credit if you take the jab. So we have food inflation. We have the poorest Americans very much unable to afford the food they used to be able to buy. In desperation, they may agree to this jab. Now, project this forward. Food gets more and more expensive. The economy is not doing well. More and more jabs are offered. At some point, it might be here. Here's $100, $200, $500. Whatever it is, the government can just print the money. And the people can't afford the food. And so this is an attack on the poorest Americans.
Right. It's, as I said, the Nazi philosophy of useless eaters that was condemned in the Nuremberg judgment in 1946. The Nazis, you know, the poor, the oppressed, the downtrodden, people of color, gays, et cetera. Sure. They'll be wiped out. Right. That's the agenda here as I see it.
That is the agenda. Well, Dr. Boyle, I hope we get a chance to talk again because there's so much to go into, but you've given an enormous amount of information here today. I want to encourage people to get your book, Resisting Medical Tyranny, and Also, you don't have a website or channels, but people can find your interviews or search for you online. Is there anything else you'd like to add that we failed to cover?
Yeah, I think there's one other point. To people can understand the severity of what's going on here, Mike, I want to read to you the definition of a crime against humanity under the Nuremberg Charter that we, the United States, used to prosecute the major Nazi war criminals after World War II. And it says quite clearly, and this is customary international criminal law, it says, crimes against humanity, namely murder, extermination, and other inhumane acts committed against any civilian population, whether or not in violation of the domestic law of the countries were perpetrated. That's exactly what is going on here. Murder, extermination, and other inhumane acts committed against any civilian population. And the history here, Mike, is this. That language was put in there specifically for the purpose of criminalizing the Nazi persecution and extermination of their own Jewish citizens in Germany. Okay?
Good point.
That's why it was put in there. This is exactly what is being done to us, American citizens of the United States government. Our own government is subjecting us to Nuremberg crimes against humanity. And as that chapter, that article makes clear, it's completely irrelevant that any of this is authorized by U.S. domestic law. And of course, it isn't under my Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989. But that gives you an idea of how historically unprecedented this is. The last time we confronted anything like this was the Nazi persecution and extermination of the Jews. Right. That's what we're seeing.
Right, right. And another important distinction is, in that time, a Jewish victim was aware that they were being rounded up and transported and taken for extermination or put into a prison camp or a slave labor camp to die of starvation and disease. Yet so many people today who are being exterminated, they go along with it. They think they're being helped. It's as if whoever's running all this, they've figured out a way to trick people into self-extermination. And so many of those taking these jabs or going along with everything that's happening, the medical tyranny, they think they're good people are doing good things. They think they are the moral ones in society. It's shocking.
Well, it's sort of like that movie Soylent Green, right? Where people go in and suicide centers. I don't know what else to say, Mike. There it is. History is repeating itself.
Well, I hope there are enough of us left to write the history books on this one, but it's going to be a whopper of a psychological trauma mystery of how they terrorize so many people with psychological conditioning, to convince them to exterminate themselves. It's just extraordinary. Right?
Well, I did write my book, Resisting Medical Tyranny, to provide people with ammunition they can use to fight back. It's in plain English, not a lot of legal mumbo jumbo. And then before that book, I have an earlier book, Biowarfare and Terrorism, that goes through the history of U.S. biological warfare weapons programs from the Reagan administration until the time that book went to press, around 2003 or so. And then Resisting Medical Tyranny brings it up to date.
All right, perfect. Resisting Medical Tyranny, folks, you can find that at book retailers everywhere. And Dr. Boyle, let me just say on behalf of our audience, we are so thankful for you and your voice and your courage and the work that you're doing. No one else can interpret this as well as you, and you're blowing the whistle, you're sounding the alarm. We thank God that you're here and helping humanity in this time. Thank you so much.
Well, it's nice of you to say that, Mike. And yeah, I mean, we have to keep faith alive, right? That we're here, we're in the struggle of our lives. We have to fight back. We have no alternative, as I see it.
That's right. Well said. Well, thank you for joining me and spending all this time. We greatly appreciate you. And for those of you listening, again, this has been an interview with Dr. Francis Boyle, and you are free to repost this interview on your own channels or other platforms. Please do so. Spread the word, sound the alarm, and take the actions to try to hold these people responsible for their crimes against humanity. You know, the legal investigations and grand juries and so on that Dr. Boyle mentioned. So thank you all for listening, and thank you, Dr. Boyle, once again for joining me. It's been a pleasure.
Sure, Mike, and keep up the good work.
We shall do our best.